This is Hairdressing Masterminds. I am Esmael Gillis, and I present you Tony Gordon, co-founder of Gordon Salons in Chicago. Hello.
Hey, Tony.
Welcome.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Great. It's a Monday. You know, we got training going on. We got new podcasts going up. I got conversations with hairdressers just like you.
Okay.
Exciting.
Good. Okay, so you know what to do. So, Tony, can you tell us a bit about yourself and or the beginning of your journey? How is your story in hairdressing?
Well, I'm a fourth generation hair designer. My great grandmother was a wig maker. My grandmother was a colorist. My father was a famous salon owner. And I did everything in my power to do something different. And then I decided to, you know, during an economic collapse in the United States, I decided to check it out at my father's request. I was able to do some of the financial stuff for him. So he knew he could use me in that way. And then I trained to be a hairdresser the rest of the time. But what I discovered was I loved doing hair right away.
Okay.
when before I was busy doing other things. So now my wife and I have four salons in the Chicago area. They're all high-end salons. We've been one of the top 200 salons in the USA for 15 years.
That's impressive.
In the USA and North America, it's Canada too.
Okay.
And then we were Chicago Magazine's Reader's Choice Award for 2016 and 2017. And, you know, we've been doing it for a long time. We have a very good group, a great group of hairdressers. We train everybody. We have an award-winning training program. We train all of our staff. You know, it's been good to be in the industry. We're really steeped in the industry. You know, we go to salon conferences, and then we're, you know, we my podcast and YouTube channel is all about the industry. So it really helps. We take a lot of young hairdressers and train them to be successful hairdressers. So it's really quite good. Yeah, my kids are hairdressers too.
Oh, your hairdressers too. So you influence them also. They grew up in it.
Yes.
Yeah. They always knew they want to do that, Tony?
Not necessarily. I think that it might have been a little bit of a fallback position, because I think maybe they weren't ready to go to college at the time or something like that. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but it was been good, because it's been, I think that, you know, for a lot of people, going to beauty school is a precursor to something else. We have people who have a beauty school license, and they are working in the salon doing something else, not necessarily hair. We have a manager who's a hairdresser. She runs the front desk and the finance. We have people who are in accounting who are hairdressers. So it's good, because they have a marketing,
yeah,
they have a different viewpoint.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, what's your mission at the end? Because I always hear you train. You have your own training program. Do you use that training program, Tony, only for your own staff?
Yes.
Or do you also come out to train other hairdressers around?
Not necessarily. Although that's going to be my focus in the future, will be to do that, because we're looking to train for the missing links, the missing parts of hairdressing. I think everybody really focuses on technical skill, and that's very important, but they don't focus in on soft skills. And so I'm saying we need to focus in on that as well.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very, very important issue, because we have like kind of the same problems in Belgium.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know about schooling systems in America, How is that? Are they adequate in what they offer, or are there also a lot of missing links there? When you get somebody in your salon who finishes a school, do you have a lot of work on them, or do they understand the basics already, or totally not?
Yeah. About that. I don't know. I think people come out of beauty school with mostly the majority of them, not all of them, but the majority of them come out with a rudimentary knowledge of the of what it is that needs to be done. So we have to retrain them to a degree or take their skills further. I think that I do think that people get exposed to what you need to do in beauty school. The issue is that this field has a lot to do with expertise. So, you know, it's like that game called Othello. You learn it in 1 minute, but it takes a lifetime to master. And I think that kind of what we do is it takes a year or maybe 2 years to learn what it is that we're doing, but it's a craft, and you have to learn how to master that craft, not only from a technical perspective, for sure, that's the most obvious thing technically, but then you learn it later. So, you know, I think it kind of depends on what the expectation is for schools. You know, are we expecting, I think sometimes people have a misnomer on what schools can achieve. You know, there's certain things which can't be trained. Like, you can't train somebody to go from client to client to client. I don't think so. That's something that you have to experience. You know, you can train somebody on how to do a haircut. You can train somebody on a color formulation. You can train somebody on how to do a consultation. But you actually cannot train someone to go from person to person to person. They have to experience that. You can train all the different elements of it, and then that all comes together. But then they're going to be refining that throughout their whole life. And that's the thing. I mean, I think that people get a bachelor's degree in engineering, you know, or accounting or something. And, you know, they learn a lot of information about that field, and only some of it. And then they go into a specific engineering or accounting firm, and only a small piece of that 4 years of education is actually being used. And in fact, there's even more information because this particular firm does it in a particular way. So they still need to learn the culture of that place. They still need to learn. And most of the times, people don't know. They don't know what it is. I mean, once in a while they know, but it's very rare. Most people need upgrade training, and, you know, and then they need it again and again. New products come out, new technology comes out, and the whole thing is different again. And now we're moving at such a fast pace. Yeah. The training is happening so quickly that the landscape is training so quickly. And actually, a lot of it is being driven by technology. And I don't just mean Instagram and that kind of thing. I mean, like, a new product like Olaplex comes out, and it changes our ability to do some of these radical colors where you need to bleach out the hair first, for instance. You know, but you have to know how to use that. We have all kinds of in-salon software that's being used, not necessarily, again, social media, that needs to change. And you need to keep up with that thing, like specialty scales and all kinds of devices and things like that. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's quite unusual that everybody is coming out of school just really ready and raring to go. It's just, I don't think it's like that in any field, quite frankly. We find people who come out with exactly the right skill set, and their soft skills are awful. I think you find that in all sorts of offices, like law offices, lawyers that have, you know, like they're really great. And I really feel sorry for companies that need a really high level person, like you need a doctor, a lawyer, or engineer, and that person doesn't have the cultural ability to switch to whatever you're doing, you know.
Could it be that we then have a too high, our expectation is too high for younger people when
for they schools for schools, I mean, I know in Europe it's different, right? And it's probably different in each country. You know, there's more of like a trade program, which is, somebody said three years long. How long is it, Ismail? How long is it?
So for us in Belgium, it's like you can do 3 to 4 years, but if you start very young, you can do 5 years. Okay. So the issue with us in Belgium is we have grades in the schooling system. So, and they put hairdressing totally underneath. So the people you attract, mostly the people who don't like to go to school, who can't follow some programs, who don't like to study, or don't understand, or don't have the abilities, and they land in the hairdressing or beauty schools. Now, for maybe 15 persons who come in that school, 2 to 3 to 4 maximum come out, and there are people you can do something with. The rest are people with a degree as hairdresser, but they are not really hairdressers. And what happens with us is those people disappear in the market and they go do totally different things, which is okay. Mm-hmm. And then happens the next step is that the 2, the 3, the 4 who come in, they have a tremendous, you have a tremendous work on bringing them to the level you want in your salon, to bring the service you want to bring. So we have one big handicap is our wages in Belgium. I think we are the second most expensive country in taxes on wages. So if you pay you pay a wage, you have to multiply it with 2.1 to 2.3. Mm-hmm. So right away, you have a very high cost, mm-hmm. but you have a person who maybe is interested to learn. And then you have you have to put energy and time and money in it before, and it takes sometimes 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, sometimes a year before they are working and bringing up their cost, you know? And it's like a big challenge, because what happens on the market with us in Belgium is the last past 2 to 3 years, salons have begun to go smaller again. Uh-huh. So we don't grow anymore in people to reduce the costs.
Hmm.
Yeah. You see?
Yeah.
And it's not that of a good evolution, but that's what it is now. So, okay, they are trained in technical skills. And I understand it's true, like you told, if they're not on that level you expect, you can train them yourself if you have a good program.
Yeah, but it's hard to. So are the schools government funded then? Are they government entities, like they're part of the government?
Most of the schools are government funded, most of the schools. And you had two big academies in Belgium, and one is in Antwerp, and the other was in the Sydney class. It's a city near Ghent, so where I went myself, but that doesn't exist anymore. And the other one in Antwerp is like a private school, but it's also they weren't able to keep their level, to keep their quality. So I have now, for example, a stylist who came in from there, and yeah, she didn't see some basic techniques, so she really didn't see them. They have to work in a salon to do clients, and nobody teaches them or coaches them. So yeah, she lost a little bit of time, she lost a little bit of money. So, and that's where we are now.
It's challenging for sure. The United States, the schools are independent, although there are some schools that are owned and operated by local municipalities.
Yeah.
One here in Northern Illinois called the College of Lake County, which has a technical campus that they send high school students to learn beauty culture. And they can get their license from there. Very few of those people end up being professional hairstylists. Then there is a whole group of independent schools, and those schools can take students with government-funded tuition or government-backed loans for the tuition. Okay. So they pay a tuition, which is usually somewhere around $20,000, and that it becomes a loan, and that loan is backed by the government. Now, the government has said that they would stop giving those loans if the school somehow did not pass certain requirements. They have a whole host of different requirements, one of which is that they had to be, a certain number of those students had to be in the field a year later or a time later. But the truth is that in the beauty industry, only 5% of the people are doing hair after 5 years of being in school. So only 5% are in beauty 5 years after being in school. And so they've really tightened up on it. And we've lost a lot of beauty schools in our area and around in the country in general. There's been a retrenchment, a implosion of the school system a little bit. And the demographics went against beauty schools as well, but that's starting to come back. That goes in ebbs and flows. You know, the industry is in a serious flux. There's a lot of fear around Amazon and how they're going to affect retail. There's a lot of fear around independent booth rental situations for hairdressers. There is a lot. I think that we're in a time of intense fluctuation in the industry. Again, we have new technologies. We have social media, which can really catapult someone into the limelight very quickly. And their work can push them really far. I mean, we've always had some degree of that, but now we really have it in spades. Like, it can happen to anyone who does a really, you know, a lot of posting, and suddenly they're Insta famous. And, you know, and in a way that's really good, but it means that companies and individuals need to play that game. They need to be in there. They need to be taking a lot of pictures. They need to be taking video. They need to be posting a lot. And they need to get themselves out there. They need to be in a growth mindset. And if they're not, they're going to get left behind. So I think that one, you know, I had a discussion with a friend of mine who is Insta famous, somebody who's going to be on my podcast. And one of the things he said was that he has 39,000 followers, but he says that he's getting 70 new clients a month because of his Instagram presence. 70.
So you think that's the is that your feeling about the evolution of our industry, Tony? Is that where
I think it's being struck on a whole variety of different levels?
Yeah,
I think that the industry is really changing in a whole lot of ways.
Yes.
Not just, you know, the corporations, it's, you know, it is happening because of the corporations. Like, everybody's fighting back, quite frankly. You know, everybody's fighting back. In the United States, there's a lot of different ways you can fight back, you know. So, but it's not static. I mean, you can't be static in this business. Maybe no business, but you know, I think there's a reason for short-term leases in the beauty business. You know, like, most salons get five-year leases. We get like 20-year leases, but most of them get five-year leases because businesses don't last that long. The average business lasts like 5 years, according to a lot of the what I've read. And
5 years only.
Five years only. I mean, think about it. Think about it. Somebody opens a business and they apply for a business license, and then they never file a tax return. If they never file a tax return, then as far as the government is concerned, that was a business and it never made any money. Maybe they made some money and then they gave up on it. So I'm not so sure that that's totally true, but I do understand this, that there are businesses that come and go. I think that you see a lot of salons come and go.
Yeah.
And do you see that in Belgium?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
And that's because you know, they're smaller. It's easy to pick up and go somewhere else or, you know, just quit that and move on. It wasn't a huge investment. But, you know, here, like something that I'm doing where I have almost 70 people working for me, I have a lot of people that rely on the company for jobs. And so I need to continue to have that, you know, in continuity. So we have training programs, we have internal systems. That's the way to grow it. You have to have systems, written systems, by which people can follow, be trained quicker. And those things need to adjust as well. They need
I agree with that, because that's one of the points. But do you also feel that the hair cosmetic corporations really contribute to the development of our craft? Because they play also a major role in how hairdressers nowadays display their salons and display their concepts.
True. Yeah, it's very true. Well, as far as the craft is concerned, I do think that we're involved with Aveda, and Aveda is very, very focused on the craft. And when you say the craft, what I assume that you mean is the ability to produce really great hair, that it is, you know, the haircuts, the styles, the colors, everything is done in, you know, it's very much hair design. Yes. Right? It's not necessarily hair art. It's not necessarily hairdressing, although that's fine to call it hairdressing. Yeah. But I like to call it hair design, because I think designers are craft people. Yes. They're trying to achieve something. They're creating crafts, like whether it was a jar in the old days made from clay or something. They're trying to craft an object, and they're doing that with their hands. And I think that's very much what we do. And I think that you have to develop those skills over time. And I do think that the big companies actually do support that. At least here in the United States, they sponsor a lot of training. There's a lot of corporate training which is done. And I mean haircut, color, updo training, which is provided by the big product companies. I see L'Oreal doing that. I see Redken doing it. I see Schwarzkopf doing it. I see Aveda doing it. I think they're all involved in that in some way. They also do interpretation of the trends in their own way, and a lot of them come out with a fashion launch, which includes a video shoot and everything else, probably about every 6 months. I see some of them sponsoring big education events that are costly to do, hundreds of thousands of dollars sometimes. And they're supporting those with third-party organizations. Like I'm part of Intercoiffure, which is also in Europe, and which it started in Europe. But Intercoiffure has a big branch here in North America. And a lot of the big manufacturers support a lot of our events, which is fantastic. And it just shows their commitment to the craft. I mean, I think the professional salon industry across the world is something that needs to be supported. There's always going to be that client who wants to get their hair done by someone who is a great designer. And I don't care even if they come up with a bunch of robots to do the work, I don't think those high-end clients are going to want a robot to be doing it. I mean, maybe in 200 years or something, but not in our lifetimes. I really don't believe that that's going to be something that people are going to opt in for.
No, of course.
Yeah.
So,
although Ismail, I do want to say, I am going on the record right here, right now. I'm saying I do think there will be robots that can do hair, especially barber robots. But I don't think any of my clients or your clients are going to want that thing to touch them.
Not yet. We have to see the results before. But what I do believe in is like the automated backwashers. It already exists. I think Takara Belmont was working on a prototype of it. So
yeah,
it could be something you could add to your salon and to release the pressure of work on your staff and still give like kind of a good service maybe. But I think at the end, like it's always also important that you have that feeling with your client, that you have really that touchy with your clients. So maybe we can leave it open and we'll see what the future will bring us.
Yeah, they have those now. Yeah. And I do think that those sort of automated backwash units, which you don't see them much. I met one person who had one in Denver. And they told me that it was constantly, it would break. And no one knew how to fix them. So, I do think that they, you know, the more moving parts, the more challenging something like that can be. But I could see how in a small salon like are starting to occur in Belgium, as you suggest, it might be a way to reduce your overhead because the cost of the employee to just shampoo is might be outrageous, as some people feel it is here in certain states. There's minimum wage laws, which many people feel are just so outrageous that maybe they would be forced to use a piece of equipment like that. Yeah. I know they've been working on those in one variety or another. You can look them up on YouTube. You can see some of them that exist.
Yeah. Okay. So Tony, what is for you, how do I say, what is there some like a kind of an inspiration or philosophy or a habit that you have that helps you improve your life or helps you stay on track or keeps you motivated when it's a little bit difficult?
Yeah. You know, I have been always a pursuer of all sorts of information that helped me stay on track or get my life on track. And I have been pursuing one thing or another like that, everything from physical to spiritual to intellectual for the better part of my life, actually, going back to really a young age. I've actually always been a little bit of a seeker in that way. I think that, I think it changes over time.
Yes.
Right now, I would say I do meditation. I listen to different motivators. I read motivational books. I read business books. And I use various types of motivation. I think one of the most, I mean, various types of saying a mantra or doing something like that, like meditation.
Yes, it's powerful. That's powerful.
I think that one thing which is probably the most powerful is a Chinese method that I learned many, many, many years ago called Qigong.
Qigong, yeah.
Qigong, it's kind of a derivative of Tai Chi, but it's mainly about breathing. And I don't know a lot about it. I actually took a class once and I felt like it actually pushed me back. I think sometimes when you get steeped in these things, there's language to learn and all kinds of other spirit, things that have nothing to do with letting it evolve. The best thing I did was I read some books on it and I picked out what was right for me and I started to do the practice. And I think that it is, it's something called the microcosmic orbit, which is the most simple aspect of it, is great because it reduces your stress and it channels your stress. And it also can give you energy that you can then apply also. It's almost like you're drawing energy up from the earth or something. So it might be sound a little hokey, but I think it's something you have to try. But I think that's one of the best things that I've been doing. Also, I've been paying attention to a lot of really popular people that are in this space of business motivation, philosophy, psychology, and all those other kinds of things. Everybody from, Grant Cardone, and right now certainly Brian Rose is everybody should be watching his podcast and YouTube channel, because I think that he's incredibly motivational, and just listening to a variety of people. But personally, I think going to Tony Robbins, and specifically Tony Robbins, Unleash the Power Within program, about 3 years ago, was incredibly influential.
Yes.
I think that it was a turning point in my life, where maybe I was at a point where I was about to go through a midlife crisis, I guess I would say, you know, being in my 50s.
Yes.
And I went to this event, walked on coals. If you can walk on hot coals, damn it, you can do anything. Yes. And walked on coals, decided to do triathlons, decided to open more businesses. Yeah. And saw the power of that whole program.
Yeah.
is very powerful. And I know he's taken some heat for some stuff he's done lately, and I don't agree with everything he does either, but the event, which is 4 days and probably about 48 hours. Yes. 48 hours, something like that in 4 days, is incredibly transformative. And I saw it all around me. Men, women, children were being transformed around me at this event. So I advise people to go to Unleash the Power Within. It's probably his least expensive thing that he does.
Yeah. I've read some books, but yeah, it's in the States, so for us it's a bit far. But I think it's powerful. It's one of the most powerful influencers, I think, yeah, for the moment.
Yeah, I think that it is. That has continued to be extremely powerful. Trying to decide if I have time to do it again this summer, because he's coming back to Chicago.
Okay.
But yeah, I think that is truly transformative. And then, of course, you know, you commit to a goal when you're there, or a couple of goals. And one of my goals was to do all these triathlons. So suddenly I was like Brian, not as much as what Brian's doing, but Brian is pursuing an Ironman, and I was doing, which is a triathlon. And I was doing the same thing that summer, and ended up doing four of them. So that was a really transformative year. And, you know, I dropped my